My dear fellow welfarers, if there were, had been such a thing as a kind of spiritual Victoria Cross awarded not for deeds, however brave, for the uprise and maintenance of human power, but rather for deeds carried on behalf of God and His truth, I believe that the 11th chapter of Hebrews will be a record of some of those at least who received that award. And the things that they did are recorded. They've been led by Brother Len. I need not read them again. But following upon the chapter, the usual word wherefore occurs. But what falls in the 12th chapter arises naturally from what came in the 11th. And he tells us in the first verse that these people of old are like a cloud. They're all around us in their example, and they're spurring us on that we might become victors in our own quest for righteousness and overcoming. That we may set at naught the sin that so easily threatens us, and that we, with endurance and patience, continue in the path which God has chosen for us. And then he says, you might want an even greater example than that. These were indeed great men and women, but you may want a greater example. And if you do, then look to Jesus, who authored, but the author of your faith, who will finish it, and who himself endured those things which came upon him, despising and shame and ignominy and all the dread nature of the cross, and is now set down on the right hand of the throne of God. Think about him as he stands before his accusers. Listening to false charges which had no substance. Hearing their jibes and their criticisms of him. And standing firm in spite of all that could be said against him or done against him. If you do that, if you look at him, as well as those great, the great clouds around you, you will not be wearied nor faint in your mind. We know that is true if we look at Jesus and that great company of people who went before him, who showed not all his faith but some of it. We cannot but be encouraged and strengthened in our holy faith. We cannot faint in our minds because of the example set before us, which inspire us and move us to try to emulate them. But then he goes on to say in verse 4 of this 12th chapter, you are not like them. There is isn't a blood striving against him, but you haven't. You may never have to resist unto blood strive against sin. In spite of the evil of our generation, none of us have had to strive against sin, even to the point of bloodshed. We have had a wonderful deliverance in time past by the hand of God working upon us, and we have not had to resist as they resisted. And then he says, you might feel, or might be led to feel, that because you have not had to resist in this way, you're somehow favored by God. And when he does bring chastisement on you, you may feel resentful. You may think we've not deserved this kind of treatment, and we ought not have put up with it. And then he goes on to say, in verse 5, you've forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children. My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint without rebuke of him. Whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. And so he says in the verse 4:12, lift up the hands which hang down, and bring up the feeble knees. So if we have to suffer chastisement because of our fidelity to God, let not our hands hang down, let not our hearts be feeble or knees be feeble. Let us realize that God is chastening us for our own good, and that he will bring out from us by so doing the best that we can be. And let us rise to the stature which we can attain, to which we can attain in Christ Jesus, and so be men and women made by him, by his grace, for his purposes. Then he goes on to say, to make a comparison between a divine parent and a heavenly parent. He says in verse 9, we have had fathers of our flesh which corrected us, we gave them reverence. Shall we not much rather be in subjection to spirits, father spirits, and live? For they verily for a few days chasten us after their pleasure, he for our profit might partake us of his holiness. Those words may have been true in those days. In the world about us there, they've been turned round. In the year 1870, parents were thought not to be able to do or say anything wrong. At least so the parents thought. In 1970, parents are not supposed to do anything that is not wrong, so say the children. But I'm persuaded that that is not true of Christadelphian Home. I'm sure that in the overwhelming majority of our homes there is reverence for the parents and love for the parents by the children, and respect and love for the children by the parents, so that many times they do things together and no personality is destroyed in the activity. That I think is true of the majority of our homes today. And one thing I know, that there are hundreds of parents today rejoicing because their children are here with us, because they see the results of their labours in earlier days to teach their children the love of God and love of Jesus. And that has borne fruit because they are here today. And we rejoice with those parents at the result of their efforts and the blessing brought upon them by not only their own effort, but by the response of their children. It's a great thing to see so many young people as we see today, all moved with a love for God, largely because their parents taught them that love. We rejoice that they are here. But the problem of evil, the problem of chastisement, is a different one, is a difficult one. Sometimes we ourselves are the subject of chastisement, and sometimes those we love. And I think that the second is the hardest to bear. When we see someone we love suffering with little or nothing to help, that is very hard for us. Harder perhaps, I think, than when we are subject to chastisement or evil ourselves. I don't think I've ever been able to find a full answer to the problem of pain and suffering. I have, I think, been able to find a working hypothesis under which I conduct my life and come somewhere at least to understand what pain and sorrow are here for and why they seem to afflict some rather than others. I read some time ago in a dissertation on the problem of pain a suggestion which helped me considerably. I think it may help you. The chastisement of the Lord comes upon you or upon someone you love and enable you to bear the burden with more endurance and fortitude. This is the story of a man whose wife was arthritic. And when she wanted to come downstairs in the morning, it's very difficult indeed for her to do. And in the end, he carried her down every morning from the bedroom to the downstairs apartment. And he saw that if he continued to do that, he would never make any improvement at all in her condition. He would do it till the end of her days. So one day he steeled himself. He said, "I'm not going to carry you down anymore. You've got to get down on your own strength and by your own effort." What tremendous cost it was to him to make that decision. How much greater to carry it out and to see her struggling day by day down the stairs with every power to help her and no power to use it, but a very large extent his apparent cruelty was effective. And the day came when, well, not without difficulty, with much greater ease than ever before, she would get down the stairs by herself. And thus, apparent cruelty, which cost him, who should say what it cost him? We must put ourselves in the same position we had to do, make a decision like that ourselves. But in his apparent cruelty, he'd achieved his object and enabled her to get a better life, otherwise she wouldn't have. Perhaps that is the way in which God works toward us. He could help us any time. There's no difficulty which we fall into which we fall which he could not bring to an end by the breath of his lips, or even less than that. He could heal the one whom we love who is sick or afflicted, either mentally or bodily. He could make them well again, perfectly. We could heal our own disabilities too, whenever he wanted to, just by a word. But if he did, what would happen to our spiritual development? We should remain the same weak people as we always have been. We should not make any progress at all. And so his apparent chastisement, making us rise to the occasion, making us make our own way as far as within his purpose, by that means he can develop our characters and bring us in the end to the best that our nature can achieve, because not that he is angry against us, but because he loves us and wants to help us in all circumstances. So the apostle writes, how truly he writes, no chastening for the time present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Sometimes grievous seems hard of the word, a sufficient superlative to express what we feel and what we think. Nevertheless, afterward, it yieldeth the peaceable fruits of righteousness, and them that exercise thereby. Sometimes afterward seems a very long time away. Sometimes seems almost a lifetime away. Sometimes it is. Yet the hand of God is always there. He doesn't chasten us for his pleasure, but for our benefit. Indeed, as in the strong words of verse 8 we read, if we're not chastised, then we're bastards, a dreadful word, and not sons. The Father of spirits knows what is good for us. We do not. Always. But if we trust in him, he will so measure his dealing with us, his treatment of us, that we shall eventually learn the lesson of our pain on behalf of ourselves, on behalf of others. It matters not which. And shall enjoy the peaceable fruits of righteousness. In many ways, this world is a veil of soul making. God wants to make our souls, that is ourselves, worthy of his purpose, worthy of what he can make of us, seeing us not as we were when we first came in contact with his gospel, but as he can make us, and will make us in the end, by his grace. And so then, although we have read that our fathers chastised us according to their pleasure, and sometimes their pleasure went wrong, sometimes our response went wrong too, yet this is not so with God's dealing with us. His pleasure never goes wrong. He can always find out the real cure for all our ills, mental and spiritual, and can show us the way, not avoiding trouble and difficulty, but going right through them and winning. Christ never avoided trouble. If to avoid it was to show himself a coward, he went right through it and defied it, and in the end was more than conqueror, because God loved him. So if we accept the chastening of the Lord as it comes upon us, will we understand it or not at the time? Yet, and strive to accept his coming from him, we also shall be more than conquerors, because he loves us as much as he loves Jesus. And this love of God through Jesus for us is the greatest thing in the world. For nothing can separate us from the love of God and of Christ. We're more than conquerors because he gave himself for us. Therefore, although chastisement endures for the night, release and joy will come in the morning.